Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing how you completely smash through your goals, you are going to want to hear what George Abreu has to say. George worked for UPS, became a single-family investor, started his own construction and rehab company, and then went on to syndicate over 1,700 multifamily units. And get this. He's not done yet. He wants to get to 10,000 plus doors by the end of 2022. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on George Abreu before we start the show. George grew up in Miami with his mom and older sister. In his high school years, he knew he wanted more. He left his corporate UPS job to become a full-time single-family real estate investor. When the Great Recession hit, he took action and moved his family from Miami to Dallas, where he started J&T Developers and ultimately got into the multifamily syndication space. He now is a general partner in over 1,700 units and wants to grow that number to over 10,000 units in the next 2.5 years. Now, on to the show. Welcome, George, and thanks for being on the show. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me, Darren.
Absolutely. So George and I know each other. I've only been in the multifamily space for, the last 2.5 years. And I met George relatively early after getting involved with a multifamily mentorship group. And he was actually a sponsor, a vendor that was at many of the events. So I got the pleasure of meeting him and his wife, Tasha. And, I've just seen him and his business and now multiple businesses grow over the last few years. And so I'm so excited to have you on, George. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with the rest of the group.
Thank you, man. I'm excited to be on.
So let's talk, first of all, you moved from Miami to Texas.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Because I'm crazy.
Because you're crazy.
Real estate investing. A few years before the crash, the 2008 real estate crash, is when I had started investing in single family.
Down in Miami. So that's 2005, 2006.
Yep.
I was down there. I was in the Fort Lauderdale area.
Oh, wow.
I lived in Fort Lauderdale and then I lived in Parkland and I was working on a trading desk in Boca Raton. And that was a hot time in South Florida. I mean, real estate was cooking.
Yeah. I mean, we did well. I quit my W-2 a few months after starting and getting a few deals in. And things were going great. And then almost too good, which, the market told us that.
right, exactly. So
luckily we were just doing mainly at that point, we were just doing wholesales and we had a fix and flips, but the timing was just right. In Miami, it was literally like a switch just from one day to the next. So I didn't get caught with a bunch of properties or anything like that.
Well, that's good for you. Not everybody could say that.
Yeah. But the thing was, nobody was touching real estate. I mean, it was, the prices were going down daily. And I mean, when I say down, I mean like $20,000 a day prices were dropping. So I had to make a decision. It was either, start looking for a job and go back to corporate America or, figure something out. So we looked at Dallas and at Arizona as far as making a move and had a couple buddies that had made a move a few years back to Dallas, and they were also investors. We came out here, spent some time with them, and it was crazy comparing the two cities. I love what I saw here in Dallas and haven't looked back since.
Awesome. So you started a fix and flip business and you were doing development work. So was J&T Developers, was that developed in Miami and you brought that to Dallas, or?
Sort of. Interesting story there. So back in Miami, I didn't have the construction company. It was just, we're just investors and we were doing fix and flips, hiring general contractors to do the work. Then when I came to Dallas, so had a couple issues with contractors back in Miami, came to Dallas, really wanted to scale the fix and flips, and ran into some issues with finding a really good general contractor to keep up and with as much as I wanted to scale. And that's when I decided to start the construction company. And a buddy of mine had a company in Miami. He was a general contractor. So the original idea, his company was JMD Developers. And the idea was to do a branch of his company. But a few months in, he really wasn't feeling it. I wasn't either. So at that point, I had already kind of spread the name out. So I figured change it to JNT, which wasn't a huge difference.
Not too far off, right?
Yeah. And it worked. And that's how.
So then you guys started not only investing in Dallas, fix and flips for yourself, but you started to do development work, rehab work for other single family investors. Okay.
Right.
And so that's how you kind of got started in the Dallas market with J&T. Now, when I came to know you, you guys had already kind of made the flip to say, all right, we've done the resi side. We want to get into being a contractor, general contractor for more multifamily value add type deals. And so you started coming to different multifamily events. Help me understand how you made that decision.
Yeah, I can kind of take you through that. So, you know, we started, like you said, with working for other investors. We were doing our own flips as well as working with other investors and doing their single family fix and flips. At some point, that kind of led down the path of doing work for homeowners as well. Started doing real custom type flips and adding second stories onto houses and some new construction as well. And it is a tough business working for homeowners. I put as many systems and processes as you possibly can. At some point, I can't remember exactly what happened, but I know I landed a couple commercial clients and multifamily clients, and it was like night and day, you know, working with those type of clients versus the homeowners and even some of the investors. You know, the newer, we kept getting a lot of newer investors.
Right.
Our ideal client was an investor that had a lot of experience and they get it. But then we kept running into these newer investors and they were treating it like a custom home.
Right.
But yet you're not paying for a custom home on these flips.
Right.
So that was a struggle. And then when we landed those clients on the commercial and multifamily side, I mean, I just completely decided to change everything. I knew that was the path that we had to go on.
So the dollars are bigger and you're dealing with professionals. You're also probably working more during the normal workday.
Yes.
Versus working nights and weekends. So a lot of positives moving from the resi side to the multifamily and commercial side. But you know, one of the things you said, you started to get into kind of more custom stuff and adding on second floors and stuff. What made me think about when you said that was, here's a guy who started out as an investor in Florida, came to Dallas, just couldn't find, you know, the trusted general contractor that he wanted. So he formed his own company. You formed your own company, but you didn't know how to do it all, right? You had, I'm sure that there was a first time you had to put on that second story and you had to figure it out. You had to bring in team members and have trust in them and be able to, you know, hold the hand of the investors and let them know it's going to be okay. And, you know, that handholding and giving guidance and, you know, hey, it's going to work out. You know, that lends itself a lot to what happens later when you start going into syndication also, because people start now giving you their hard-earned money and they have to trust you with that, that you're going to be able to execute on a business plan and give them the return they're looking for. But not everybody is wired in that way to be able to take a chance and have confidence in himself and his team to deliver.
Yeah, no, I mean, communication is key. I always say that. And I always tell my staff, look, you can have a project that's delayed for months on end for whatever reason. And if you're not communicating with your client and letting them know what's going on, they're going to think the worst. But if you communicate and constantly letting them, you know, giving them updates and letting them know what's going on, nothing, you know, they get it, depending what the delays are and whatnot. But so, yeah, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I know you spoke about communication, so I wanted to.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it just says a lot about you and about the company that you formed, that you're willing to, you know, to go out there and learn how to do the next thing, you know? So now you've got this company and you're breaking into the multifamily space, which that in itself is a risk. Like, well, here's a single family guy coming in and trying to, you know, make a name for himself on the multifamily side. And you do that. And then help us understand what happens, because I don't know the story behind this, but I'm kind of guessing you start seeing some multifamily investors make some pretty good money and you're like, why am I not doing that?
Yeah. So I was still doing the single family, right? The fix and flips while I had some clients that were doing the multifamily. And kind of like what you said, you know, I started obviously speaking with them more and building a relationship and really understanding the syndication aspect of it, which I didn't know existed till then. You know, I always thought an investor that's buying multifamily, well, you know, you've got to have millions in the bank to,
right,
to do that.
Most people, I think, believe that. I believed that too until about 2.5 years ago. So,
right. So I was at the point where I had been grinding it out for however many years at that point, you know, maybe 8 years, maybe 10, I don't know. But just started feeling very transactional. You know, I had done some holds, some smaller multifamily properties, but I hadn't built a large portfolio. I didn't have a lot of passive income coming in. It was a grind, you know, one deal to the next. And scaling is just, it's difficult in single family. It can be done. It's just, it's not easy.
I hear that a lot from single family guys, like, where does the scaling kind of hit a wall? I hear people talk about, you know, hey, when I get between 10 and 20 properties, I'm just getting bogged down. I don't know if that's the right number or not, but you know, what's your sense? You know, there's a certain bandwidth that you have if you own a bunch of rental properties that all of a sudden it starts to make it really hard to go after the next one because you're spending so much time managing the existing portfolio.
Yeah, I think it's where, you know, usually you don't have a large staff when you're a single family investor. You don't have a ton of cash flow coming in. Like I said, it's very transactional, especially on the fix and flips. I mean,
right.
You don't get paid till you
sell it.
And sell it. So I think managing that cash flow, it gets difficult and hard to justify having the staff to be able to scale. I mean, when you scale, you need to have your systems and processes in place, and then you need to have a team that can execute on it. And I feel like on single family, you've got to really be on point with those systems and to hold your team accountable.
Right. So now you mentioned that you had some small multifamily. I think that if my recollection is correct, I don't know if it was you or Tasha or somebody mentioned that you had a smaller property in Waco. Is that
yes.
correct? How many units is that?
37.
37 units. So that, you know, for a lot of people, 37 units is not tiny, right? In our world, when people are doing huge deals, that sounds small, you know, but for a lot of people, that's a huge jump. Well, so how did you do that 37 unit deal?
Well, that was our first syndication deal. Small.
Oh, was one. It? Okay. It was
a real small syndication, but yeah, okay. Now before that we had a couple fourplexes, eightplex and some single families.
Okay. But, so the 37 was your first syndication.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so was that about the time when we got to know each other, when you started to come to the multifamily events and started to try to grow the multifamily?
Yeah, it would have been a little bit before that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I end up getting a deal, my first syndication deal, 76 unit deal. And, you know, most, you know, I've counseled with a lot of other syndicators and everyone said, you know, hey, Darren, the first thing you got to do is start on the external rehab, because, which is very smart. I understand the thought process behind it. It's, you know, you make the outside of the property look nicer and it attracts a better tenant. And so then you can start to charge higher rents and then you start to upgrade the interiors. So when we took over my first syndication, I was a slow process in terms of doing that external renovation. And the reason was because I did not come from the development side. I did not come from the fix and flip side. You know, numbers guy, business guy, but not a real estate guy. So I really wanted to bring out a number of different developers and contractors and walk the property and get comfortable with a partner that I was comfortable with. And so it took me a few months of, you know, bringing you guys out and a few other people out. And I ultimately decided to go with you guys. And you guys did a great job and you were very patient with a newbie syndicator. And so, you know, with that goes to a line of building trust, you know, so you have to build trust not only as the GC, but also as a syndicator. So talk to the listeners about, you know, what your view is on building trust.
I mean, that's what I've built my companies on from the beginning. You know, I think it's relationships it's huge. And you build that trust through your relationship and then, delivering on your promises, you know, executing what you say you're going to do. And I think once you do that, it's massive. You can get one client, you know, one relationship can bring you so much business. And that goes with construction or even syndications. And I think once you realize that, and that's what I try to stress to my team, like, you know, you never know. You got to treat each relationship the same because you never know where it's going to go.
That's a great point. So you've got this 37 unit, and then I didn't even know you had a 37 unit until talking with your Tasha or whoever during the renovation. But next thing you know, like I'm on your email blast and I don't know what the number was, but it was a pretty darn big number was your next syndication. And so you went from 37 to what on your second syndication?
To 216.
And then the next one was
1,275. It's a little jump.
That is crazy. So talk about scaling, you know, I mean, holy cow, going from 37 units to 200 and some odd to 1,000 plus. Talk to me about, you know, you started to bring on, you know, once you got in the syndication space, other partners. You know, who are your partners? How did you develop those relationships? You know, what are your roles within the group? And how'd you get the mindset to be able to do a 200 unit or 1,000 unit deal?
Okay.
It's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Let me see how I'm going to tackle this one. So the team, partners. So Eric Badiwala is my business partner. I've known him since middle school. Wow. Yeah, we went to middle school together. We went to high school together. Went to university together. In wow. The same fraternity.
Really?
Yeah. On the executive board and... Can't get away from the guy.
No, you guys know a lot about each other. I'm going to have a few beers with him and hear some stories.
You'll get some good stories out of that. But so yeah, him and I decided to do the single family stuff together. We both quit our W-2. We were both working at UPS after getting our degrees. And then we started doing the single family, moved to Dallas. So
he moved to Dallas also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So we started Elevate, and then as we started and we began to grow, you know, we started seeing where we had gaps. Like, so when I started the multifamily, I told myself, I was going to build it as a business and not, so much, so with my single family, with the construction company, I didn't start off that way. You know, I was trying to do everything, within our partners. But with this one, I wanted to do it different. So right off the bat, we knew with acquisitions, if we wanted to keep our pipeline filled, we were going to need somebody handling acquisitions versus just Eric and I. You know, once we get a deal, then we get tied up into that deal. We don't worry about the acquisitions. So that was the first person we brought in, which is John. And his main role is to be building relationships with brokers, be looking for deals. Then we kind of realized the next gap was raising capital and having investor relations or somebody constantly in contact with our investors. So then that's when we brought in Carrie. And our plan is to continue to just fill in those gaps. You know, we just brought on a VA recently to help us with our marketing. Probably going to bring on another VA pretty soon. And yeah.
Awesome.
So I think there was a two part to that one, but I can't remember what it was. Well,
you covered the partners part. For sure.
The 1,000 units.
The mindset. I mean,
216, 1,000.
It's mindset. I mean, there's a lot of people that can't get there. So in their mind, so how do you get there?
I think multifamily overall is a lot of mindset. You know, just the bigger numbers, the being able to speak to individuals about how much money they have. You know, and how much money they want to invest. And that alone, I think we're not raised to speak about money like that, which is sad. We should. So one is the mindset, and then goes back to kind of how we started with relationships. I mean, I was doing a ton of networking and just started connecting with the right partners and willing to co-GP with other GPs and leveraging their, you know, the functions that they're good at with what we're good at and just making a good partnership.
So I could be wrong, but I think I recall having a conversation with you that you and your team ended up finding like a large partner that told you, hey, we're looking for these big deals. Mm-hmm. And so did that help you kind of catapult to the bigger deals because you had, you know, another relationship that you had developed that said that that's what they were looking for?
Correct. Yeah. The 1200 unit portfolio. I mean, without that partnership, we wouldn't even been looking for something that big. We built a relationship with another GP that was their specialty. They had the...
Who built that relationship? How did that come about?
So it's a good story. went to high school with this individual.
Awesome. So you guys already knew each other?
We knew each other. We hadn't seen each other for years. We knew we were both in real estate, but I thought he was probably still in single family. You know, I hadn't seen him for years. And then I was at IMN in Dallas and we ran into each other, kind of did like a double take, you know, walking across from each other, and ended up reconnecting. You know, he told me about what he was doing. They had over 10,000 units. At that point, we only had, a little bit over 300 or so. So it seemed like they were looking to expand into this area, and they're out of South Florida. So we went, met their team. They met our team. We built that relationship for a little bit and then started looking for deals, and it didn't take very long to find something.
That's great. So that speaks to a few different things. You know, one is, you know, letting people know what you do. Right. Yep. I mean, there's certain people in your life, you know, from prior, whether it be growing up, whether it be, hey, you worked with somebody in a different industry, and they will pigeonhole you into this box that you're this guy, you're a single family guy, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not until you let people know that, no, look, I have expanded. I'm now in multifamily. I've got this other business that does multifamily rehab, and you know, we've got 300 units under our belt. We're serious about this and we're going to expand. Then all of a sudden that person looks at you a little differently, you know, that, and had you not gone to the conference, you wouldn't have bumped into them. But, you know, getting yourself out there and letting people know what you do is critical, because people might remember you from 10 or 20 years ago in a completely different career path.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I get people that tell me all the time, oh, you know, I don't do social media, or I don't do that. And why not? You know, I mean, what are you scared of? What's the fear behind it? Just tell everybody what you do. I don't know if it comes with being passionate about what you do, or just, I don't know. To me, it just, it clicked. I mean, I was one of those that didn't do social media or didn't pay too much attention to it. But it was more because I was just so busy. But once I realized what it could do for business and relationships, then, you know, I was all in.
That's huge. Let's segue there, because I think that's an area where I think you've done a phenomenal job in is in social media. And I, you know, both Facebook, Instagram, you put out a lot of good quality content for people to learn. And, you know, if you put out content to help people learn, then, you know, they're attracted to you to continue to, because you could help them, you know, do right. what you did. And so there's a few things with social media. One is, you know, I remember talking to you early on, and like you were a little nervous about it, you know, nervous about putting out posts, nervous about, I remember when you first spoke at an event, you know, you were nervous about doing that. And now it's like George Abreu on the speaking circuit, you know, like it's like he's everywhere. So, which is awesome. You know, if people don't know you and don't know what you do, they can't do business with you. And that's what I kept hearing over and over and over again when I would go to not just real estate conferences, but entrepreneurial conferences, you know. And I was like you. I was not on Facebook or Instagram or anything until I got involved with real estate 3 years ago. And it's still, you know, it feels a little braggadocious, you know, having, you know, posting stuff and you feel like you're, but what gets me over the hump is when all of a sudden I have a guy, you know, reach out to me on Instagram from Chicago or Las Vegas or a guy from Spain, or, you know, like, and then we have a call and he wants to just pick my brain in terms of, you know, how do I do it? And how do I get involved? And can I get involved in your next deal? And then all of a sudden I'm like, look, that's who we're doing it for, right? Yeah. Is there are always going to be people that will judge you, you know? Oh man, George just put out another post, you know, braggadocious, you know, but it's not for the guy that already knows you, you know, it's for the guy that doesn't know you yet, or he doesn't know what you do. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the golf course and all of a sudden I play with somebody I haven't played with in a long time. And they're like, damn, man, you're like, you're all of a sudden this real estate guy, like, hey, how do I get involved? And this is somebody that never liked one picture or sent one text or one email or what, but
in the background,
they're watching, you know, and then next thing you know, they want to learn, you know, and that's what it's all about. It's, you know, I'm sure there's people out there on social media that just want a million likes to pump up their ego, but that's not, you know, my intent or my heart. And I don't think that's where you're coming at it from. It's how do we get out and interact with more people?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it depends on what you're posting and what you're doing on social media. I mean, I think somebody told me a long time ago was, just document what you're doing and just put it out there. You'll be surprised how many people, you know, it seems easy to you and it seems natural to you, but others that don't know how to do it and don't live that day to day, they're going to see it and they're going to get inspired or they're going to want to know more. So, I mean, that's all I do is I just document what I'm doing and I put it out there. And then, you know, obviously we've evolved from that with some educating and try to add a little more value on the content. But I mean, it's same thing you said. I mean, I get people that reach out to me all the time and tell me that, you know, thank you, you've inspired me, you've motivated me. It's like, wow, you know, I didn't even,
How awesome is that? So, you know, for me, there's two goals for getting, you know, doing this real estate thing is one is to, you know, to have financial freedom like most people want. But two is to inspire others, man. If you can help one person like go after a dream that they didn't think that they can get, you know, that to me is awesome. What life is all about, right? I mean, it's like helping others, coaching others, like and you have been a leader in the space. And look, when you start taking off, right, there's some jealousy that goes along with it too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that.
I'm sure you have. Like, look, you go from 37 units to 200 units to, and then this is the big one. I mean, going from 200 to 1,000 plus units. And I will even say this. I didn't hear anybody say this, okay? But I would put money on it that somebody thought in their head, I want them to fail. On that 1,000 unit portfolio, I don't think they could raise the money out. I want to see them fail and fall on their face. And look, that could have happened. It did not happen. You guys raised the money. You got the deal and you developed, you know, you did what you said you were going to do for that other investor partner, you know, from Florida that you bumped into. But there are certain people that, because their mindset is saying that they can't do a 1,000 unit deal, they want you to fall down, you know. But and even if you fell down, you look, you went after it and you would have tried, you know. Right. That's the biggest thing.
Would have learned from it.
You would have learned from it, and you would have not looked back and said, you know, fear stopped you. You know, you must have been afraid. Tell me about being afraid on that deal.
I mean, yeah, you got to raise $20 million.
$20 million in one deal. And how many of you were, there was three of you that were raising money?
Yeah, it's about right.
So that's
four.
Four?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. 20 million, you know. So where did you get most of the money? And so I'm not talking about telling me specific people, like friends, family, mentorship groups, people you met at conferences. What kind of, where did the bulk of the money come from?
It was a mixture, but mostly from relationships. I mean, I hate saying it again, but and relationships from that I had for a few years, and some that I had recently met at networking events. That was the majority of it. You know, from then we've done a couple more deals, and we have a lot more stuff coming now through marketing as well, just because we've built that platform out. But in the beginning, it was mainly relationships and networking.
Were most of the investors first-time multifamily passive investors, or were most already knew they wanted to invest in multifamily, they just hadn't done a deal with you yet?
I would say maybe like 70 had already invested in some deals and were experienced. Some active guys too, that investors that wanted to put in passively. I mean, I don't know about yourself, but I mean, I still do passive investments as well.
Yeah, and right.
And then the other 30 were newer, knew they wanted to invest in real estate, and just hadn't done it yet.
Haven't done it yet. So yeah, I kind of had similar. Mine was probably more 50-50 between, you know, multifamily mentorship group, like multifamily investors, and personal network. And what I found was it was kind of two different, you know, each subset kind of had their own way of looking at the deals. Like the ones that knew they wanted multifamily, it was, hey, you don't have to talk to me about like why multifamily is good asset class. I'm already sold on that. It's, hey, I like you. I like your deal, but I've got four other deals in my inbox. I can only invest in one. So it's more a relative value, like between the deals, which one is the better deal to get into? That's for the multifamily guys. And then for the personal network, it's more like, hey, I know you, I trust you, but I don't really understand this thing. How does it work? And, you know, what are the returns and how does it work? And so there's a little bit more handholding, but there's less competition on the deal side.
Yeah. Can't tell you which one's easier. But yeah, I've had same thing.
That's funny. I don't know which one is easier either. I would say that the personal network, the ones that didn't know how to do it, it's more time consuming but it's also really gratifying to me personally, because they're like, holy cow, I never knew I could do this.
Yep.
And I'm like, I didn't know we could do this until 2 or 3 years ago either. Mm-hmm. You know? So you've done an awesome job on social media, and you know, I applaud you for, you know, pushing past the fear on one, the size of the deals you go after. Two, you know, getting yourself out there on social media and speaking engagements. It can be scary. And
yeah, it's still nerve-wracking.
Right. But you think about the people that you help. You know, that's that really the focus is, you know, who can I help by this and who can I serve by this, you know? And, you know, I think the big man upstairs, you know, he didn't put us on this earth just to have us, you know, squirrel things away for ourselves. Like, I believe he really wants us to help each other. And so in this space that we're in, kind of building wealth, you know, through real estate, you can't help people unless they know who you are. And so applaud you for that, man. So
thank you.
Talk about the money piece again, okay? Because raising capital to a lot of people is scary. And a lot of people think of raising capital as, I need to get money from this person to get my deal done. Well, if you have that mindset, you're
good luck.
Yeah, good luck, because you're really focused on yourself, and you're really you're missing the point of being able to serve others. And I think that you have that service mindset that, look, you're presenting an opportunity, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is, like you said, you know, I didn't know about investing passively in multifamily till about three and a half years ago. Just investing passively, what it's done for me alone, I mean, it's a game changer with taxes and with the returns I'm getting. So I'm just passionate about telling others about that. Cause I mean, I know how many people have no clue. You know, they think you've got to keep your money in your 401 or whatever it is, you know, your retirement plan. And there's better ways, you know.
I completely agree. And it floors me. It really does. It floors me that I went through 48 years of my life and didn't have one person present that opportunity. Yeah. And, you know, I know it's a completely different scenario, but I mean, if you had a cure to, you know, an illness, you would obviously share that with people that you care about, right? And share that with the world. And here you are, you're saying, hey, I invested passively and it was a game changer for you. And so now you're here out telling other people, hey, you can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
So awesome.
Yeah.
So people talk about having a vertically integrated company, okay, in multifamily. So a lot of times in multifamily, so what does that mean to, you know, for the listeners out there? You know, you have sponsors that will syndicate deals and raise money from limited partners. And then you have a lot of syndicators will use third-party property management companies, and then they'll use third-party, you know, contractors to do the rehab. And some also will, you know, purchase goods for the rehab, you know, and for the interior rehab through third parties. And, you know, when you purchase from other people, obviously there's markups. So as syndicators get larger, they talk about this term becoming more vertically integrated. And that could be a lot of syndicators. The first step is, all right, once we get to a certain amount of units, we have all these properties that are being managed by third parties, we're going to actually start our own property management company and bring all that in-house. So to give them more control. Well, for you, you had the GC side and the rehab side. So talk to us about what your view is on you know, creating a vertically integrated multifamily company and kind of what's your viewpoint on that?
I think it's great if you can do it. The whole point is to have more control, right, on how things get done. That's why I started the general contracting company. I wanted more control. I wanted my systems, my processes to get done. I didn't want to count on somebody else doing it right. The problem is every function that you decide to bring in-house, I mean, you're bringing in a new company. You're starting, it's a whole company within itself.
Right.
And I think when people talk about it, some investors, they don't take that into account. It's not like, I mean, that company has to be able to maintain itself with or without your deals, which makes it, you know, depending on how much volume you have. If you have enough volume, then yes, your deals can sustain it alone. But Yeah, I mean, I would love to have every single
You would love to have. So one of the things I look at, you know, at, from you and your team as being a big differentiator is, all right, George and his team, when they go on site, you know, before putting in an offer, these guys are experts. They like know what it's going to cost to, you know, redo the roofs or repaint the property or, you know, put up new fencing and whatever the case may be. And you guys have an eye for, you know, looking for that, those items and being able to accurately within a, you know, plus or minus, put together a number that you guys are confident that you guys can deliver on, where that's different than somebody like me. I go on to a property, I eyeball it. I'm a business guy. Like, I'm like, well, you know, doesn't look too bad, you know, and, you know, I'm going to, you know, sometimes I might, you know, put too much in the budget. Sometimes mm-hmm. I might put too little in the budget. But I'm doing it based off of not having anywhere near the amount of knowledge that you and your team have. So talk to us about, you know, how you guys view that process before you put an offer in, and then, you know, what's the reality after you guys start executing on your business plan? How close are you?
I mean, we're pretty dead on. Every deal we've done, I think, plus or minus, I don't even want to say 5%, less than 5%. And that's from the initial property walk.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I can't say it's easy because just I've been doing it for a while and I get it, but it's there's not a lot of variables when it comes to multifamily. You know, there's, you've got your parking lots, your roof, your foundation, your drainage, you've got your major components. And then you've got your upgrades, and usually the upgrades are pretty standard too, you know? So when you break it down, it's somewhat simple, which, this is something that you asked me before we got on if I was working on anything. I actually am working on one thing. It's not ready to release or anything, but, trying to fill that gap with making it easier for investors when they do their property tours.
Fill the gap for people like me that don't know.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. Please put me on your list.
Yes. Trying to make it as easy as possible.
Please put me on your list. That would be very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a spreadsheet. That's what we've been, but, actually I think I decided I'm going to just make it an app, make it even easier than a spreadsheet. That can really help and get you to that plus or minus maybe 10%.
Yeah. That's massive. Wow. And look, you put that out there. How much are you charging me for that app?
I don't know yet. How much would you pay for that app?
I was putting you on the spot thinking it was free value. Maybe not.
For you, maybe.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to take a little backwards turn now. Let's go back to your childhood. Like, how'd you grow up? Like, where did you grow up? Did you grow up rich, poor, brothers, sisters? You know, what was your parents' influence? That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a good one. I haven't been asked that a lot, but grew up in South Florida, Miami. My parents were both Cuban-Americans, or sorry, I'm Cuban-American. They were Cubans.
So you speak Spanish well?
Sí. I don't know about well. I understand Spanish well and I speak it good enough.
All right.
Lost
it
a little bit.
I won't put you on the spot.
Yeah. My father passed away when I was young. So it was just young. How young? Three years old. So
holy cow. So you didn't really know your dad?
No.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So my mother raised us. She is an amazing human being. She showed me pretty much how to just care for everything she did was just for us, you know. I feel like I had to, not had to, but I grew up a little faster, you know, kind of became very independent and started helping with the household as early as I could. And I mean, other than that, you know, I did not grow up rich or anything, which I think has helped me kind of with the passion I have and wanting to be successful. A lot of my family are business owners, my uncles and whatnot.
So you grew up with seeing other family members start their own businesses?
Yes, yes. I had an uncle that had quite a bit of multifamily properties in Miami. And then another one that had a construction company.
So nice.
Maybe I didn't,
it rubbed off.
I didn't put that together till now, but yeah.
It rubbed off for sure. So yep. Brothers, sisters?
One sister, older sister. Okay. So she, another reason I kind of grew up quickly, you know, I was always around her. She's 5 years older. Okay. And yeah, it was just us three growing up.
So your mom never remarried as you were growing up?
No.
And so the male influences in your life were uncles, it sounds like, and they were business owners. So was there any time while you were growing up that you thought to yourself, you know, I'm going to be successful?
When I was growing up, yeah, I think later years of high school is where it kind of hit me that I wanted to do something more than just go to college and, you know, go work for corporate America.
And you think that your uncles had an influence on that, seeing other business owners?
I hadn't thought about it till now, but yeah, I mean, I guess so. Makes sense now.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, look, and now you have what, 3 girls of your own?
Yeah.
So you're
3 girls under 6.
Right. So you're still surrounded with women.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, we got a dog and I told my wife it had to be a male.
That's fine.
Yeah. Big bull mastiff, but yeah.
Nice. So, you know, that growing up and having to grow up a little earlier, you know, the influence of not being rich, you know, kind of planted a seed in your head that you wanted something more. You didn't necessarily know what it was, but you wanted something more. You know, I think that for anybody to do anything, and correct me if you think I'm off here, you know, you have to make a conscious decision at some point, you know, to go after something, you know, to go after a dream, to go after, start your own company, to take a risk and kind of go all in. And with that comes sacrifices, you know? So talk to us about some of the sacrifices that you had to make along, you know, your journey.
I guess I'll start early on, even in college. So I mentioned being in a fraternity and, you know, at some point I decided.
I'm sure there were no cervezas.
Yeah, none. At some point I decided that was it, you know, and my friends were going out partying and I was at a Barnes & Noble studying on real estate and investing.
Wow. 19, 20. That's a young age to have made that decision and to sacrifice going out with your buddies to be sitting in a Barnes & Noble reading about real estate. So,
yeah.
You know, look, I bring it up because, and I want you to talk about some more of the sacrifices you've gone through because I think there's listeners out there and there's people that read magazines and books and everybody just wants the quick fix, you know? And some people that you see the success, oh, George just closed on 1,000 unit, you know, and they just think you got that overnight.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
But they don't realize the years that went into developing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, for about been maybe a year and a half where I've controlled how much hours I work. I mean, before that, you know, for 10 years, I was working, I don't know, what's possible in a day? like 16, 18 hours. I mean, day in and day out. I mean, not a lot of wasting time, not a lot of partying. You know, I wouldn't see a Saturday and a Sunday as, okay, I get to relax. You know, it was, okay, I get to work without somebody bothering me, kind of.
Working that many hours, then that's a sacrifice on your wife too, right? I mean, she must have been pretty supportive.
Yeah, no, she's been amazing. I mean, from leaving our whole family and moving to Dallas to putting up with me working that many hours. So a lot of sacrifices in that. But then, like I said, I think about 2 years ago or so, kids started getting a little bit older. One of my fears is not being there for my children. I mean, that's my why, you know, that's why I do this day in and day out. So I made that decision where I'm not missing anything that's important for my children. This was a recent decision that I'm going to be getting home on time because I wasn't doing that. Yeah. So there's been sacrifices.
You have to make a conscious decision to do that. You know, I actually recently listened to a podcast with Phil Mickelson, the golfer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they were talking about how he left a tournament to go back for a birthday party, you know, and for, I can't remember if it was his wife's or if it was his kids, but easily he could have justified it. Look, I'm a professional golfer. You know, I'm a professional golfer. Look, I'm going to miss it, you know, but he chose to make it a priority. And it sounds like, you know, even though you've put in hours and hours and hours, family is very important to you and you want to make it a priority. So this is, I don't know, maybe not the best relationship, but think about tennis, right? Tennis players, a lot of them, you know, they become number one in the world when they're, you know, especially women, like 16, 17, early. 18, yeah. Like early, you know? And I think to myself, well, it's got to be hard when you hit the top of the top, you know, what's next? You know, like what's your next stretch goal? What's your next, you know, thing to strive for? And so I'm going to put it on you. After closing 1,000+ unit deal, what's George's next stretch goal?
Close 10 more.
is that it? You know, I'm asking you, I'm asking you, yeah. What is your stretch goal?
A couple of things in there. So one, I do want to get, and I know it's just a number, you know, and it doesn't, but 10,000 doors for some reason is a number that's sticking with me. I think at that point, there's so much you can do. And you've spoken about the vertically integrated, definitely want to bring in some more, functions in house as we grow. And yeah, I mean, I'm all in on multifamily. So
what are you guys at now with number of units?
We're at, 1,720.
So 1,720, you want to get to 10,000 units by when?
Originally, I had said end of next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
so what is it now?
You know, with COVID, following year. So what is that? 2022?
End of 2022. Wow. Yeah. So that is a big stretch goal. That's a huge stretch goal. But, you know, there's not many people that will ever do one 1,000 unit deal, right? And, you know, I asked about the stretch goal because, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the journey is a lot of times more exciting than the actual finish line. And doing something that you haven't done before, that you don't know for sure that you can do it, right? It's a challenge. It's scary and exciting at the same time. You know, like, you know you're going to be judged if you fail, right? Right. But if it's just another deal like the last one, it's probably not going to excite you as much, right?
Right. And that's something I'm kind of working on as well, which is I don't celebrate my wins enough. At least that's what people tell me. And yeah, I think I need to get better at that. But yeah, I'm usually somebody, okay, I reach my goal and it's instantly, okay, what's next?
What's the next one?
Yeah.
Well, I think every book that I've read and every podcast I've heard that talk about successful people is that they always do set that next goal for themselves, right? But you do have to celebrate the achievements along the way, right? I mean, that's, you should do that. So whoever's giving you that counsel, I would agree with them on that one. So there's people listening that maybe they haven't done a passive deal before. They want to do a passive deal. The word syndication, you know, is pretty intimidating. You know, how does somebody get involved in doing a passive deal? How would you explain it?
You're pretty much just partnering on a deal with somebody that is hopefully experienced in managing that type of deal. And you're investing those funds into it and trusting them to do the right thing.
So let me ask it in a different way. Somebody's on the line, they never heard of syndication, never heard of multifamily syndication. They're like, hey man, this sounds really good. How do I do it? Like, what action items does somebody that is passive have to do in order to get? I went through 48 years of my life and I did not have one person present me with an opportunity. Now I have, you know, a ton of emails that I get, but because I'm in the space. But there's some people that are listening that are not plugged into the space. They don't know how to do it. So how do they do it?
Just in general, or how do they do it with us?
you could talk about both.
Yeah. I mean, in general, you're going to have a minimum that you need to invest. You know, it's usually, I would say maybe average is 50,000. I know there's some that take 25. Usually we start at 100 and sometimes 50. Just depends on the deal. So one, you have to have those funds somewhere, whether it's, you know, in an IRA or in the bank. I don't know.
Well, that's something new too, is if you're not in this space, people are like, what? I could use retirement money? Yeah, you can. You can use IRA money. So it could be either after-tax money or it could be IRA money. And then whoever you're working with on the deal can coach you through how to make that happen. But a lot of people have the bulk of their investable assets in retirement money. And so they think that it's just stuck where
stuck
they
are, yep.
You know? You know, I think the first step is you have to meet sponsors, right? So one way to meet him is, you know, listening to George here. And, you know, at the end of this, he's going to give his contact info. So you could reach out to him directly. There's other podcasts you can listen to, and they bring on experienced, you know, syndicators, and you could reach out to them on social media. You could also, in any major city, they have meetup groups that are free. So you go onto an app on your phone called Meetup. You put in multifamily investing or apartment investing, find a meetup group. It's free. You go there, you will meet other passive investors, and you'll also meet syndicators. You exchange information. And then as you exchange business cards with these different syndicators, when they get deals, they will email you an opportunity. And typically they're going to offer you the opportunity to register for a webinar where they will spend an hour to talk about the deal, why they like the deal. You know, it's in this market. This is what we plan to do for a business plan. Here are the expected returns. And there is no obligation to invest at that point. So all of that is just pure learning. When you find a sponsor that you really click with, that you want to do business with, and they present you with a deal, then it's your job as the passive investor to take action. There's a lot of people out there, they want to do it, and they'll look at a lot of webinars, but they're afraid to take action. At some point, you just have to take action.
Yep, you got to pull the trigger. And I would throw in there, you know, there's so many ways to gain knowledge these days. Gain a little bit of knowledge on how to do your due diligence as well on the deal.
What do you mean by due diligence on the deal for somebody that hasn't done it before?
Yeah. So when you're on these webinars or you get the documents for an investment opportunity, you're going to get a pro forma, which is what that investor is projecting the financials are going to look like in however many years. Usually the returns are with a 5-year projection. You want to know enough to where you can pinpoint some red flags. You know, easiest one is exit cap rate, which is just the cap rate that they're projecting is going to be when they sell the property. That can make a significant difference on the returns, as well as the rent bumps. You know, if they're putting in, I've said this before, but if you've got somebody putting in $200 rent bumps and their CapEx is minimal, you know, they're not even upgrading the units or something, it doesn't make sense, right? So, you know, just gaining enough knowledge to see those things, I think is important, as well as obviously doing your homework on the team, the syndication deal team, whatever you want to call them, general partners. I think that's extremely important as well.
I completely agree. One last topic before we wrap up here. So early on, you talked about money. And look, people in America talk about everything, sports, politics, everything. But for some reason, people clam up when it comes to talking about money. Now, when I read about the really wealthy, that's what they do in their family, is that the parents teach the kids about money, but it doesn't happen in the school system. And, you know, I've been in a number of different industries and it was pretty much the same thing. People kind of clammed up about money. But it wasn't until all of a sudden I started to go and meet with different syndicators and I was like, oh my gosh, they're like so open. Like, hey, my net worth was 500,000. Now it's 5 million. I'm like, I just met this guy. Like, he just told me that. And I'm like floored by how open not everybody is, right? But
for the most part, I would say
a lot of people are pretty open about how it's done. They share with each other and they're open about, you know, what it's done for them personally and their net worth. And I think that that's important because, you know, if you don't talk about it, then you know, are you really receiving the returns that you say you are? Like, but these people are like, man, it's changed my life. It's changed my life. It's changed my life. And I'm like, well, if it could change their life, it could change mine too, right?
So
I think that that's something big. And people, listeners, you know, if you want to change your wealth and you want to change your life financially, then you have to be willing to talk about money, you know?
I don't get it. You know, cause you have these books, the Think and Grow Rich and, all these other books that were written years ago. And those concepts still work.
They do
nowadays. I just don't know why that doesn't make it into our school system. Like,
I don't know why either. I mean, obviously there's a lot of conspiracy theory people out there that say that, you know, the school system is just rigged to create workers for the wealthy.
Right.
And maybe that's the case. I don't know. But what I will tell you about books, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you go buy a book on Amazon, okay, and you spend $15 on it, $20 on it, you get that book. What do you do with it?
What do I do with it?
Yes.
I read it?
Read it. And what happens if somebody just hands you a book? Depending on who it comes from, right?
Yeah.
You may judge it based on who it comes from or if you've heard about it before. But a lot of times, if you're just given something, that book might just sit on the corner of your floor and get unread. There's something to be said about investing in yourself financially, even if it's $15, $20, because now you're holding yourself accountable. You bought that book on Amazon, so now you're going to read it. You're not going to let that money go to waste.
I think that goes for a lot of different things in life, but yes.
Exactly. Right. And then hopefully you apply what you've read, or portions of it at least. Anyway, off topic a little bit. George, wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming on. I thank you and your lovely wife and your whole team for helping us with our project. You know, you guys were great to work with, and you know, the tenants stopped me in the parking lot and they say thank you. You know,
because I love that, man. It's a great feeling.
Looks so much better, and you know, they've been living there. Some of them have been living there for 10 or 15 years and hadn't seen any money reinvested, and so you know, I'm able to just say, you know, awesome, and you're welcome. But I had you guys as a team that came in and knew what you were doing and helped us do that. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you sharing all this with other people. There's so much about your story. I mean, people are not going to be able to get their head around going from 37 to 200 to 1,000, right? But it may inspire them to do something, you know, less than that. And each step of the way, you didn't necessarily know what you were doing. You know, you just built off of the education you already had, and then you took a risk, you know?
Yeah.
So with that, thank you very much. Share with the listeners, how can they get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you?
For sure. First of all, thank you for giving us the opportunity to work with you. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
That
must have been hard to say. It was a pleasure.
It was because you're a nice guy. And it was great.
All right.
And as far as getting a hold of me, I mean, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, if you just search my name or my company, Elevate Commercial Investment Group, you'll find us. We're pretty active. If you go to my website, elevatecig.com, I've got a bunch of free content on there. And if your audience wants to send me an email at George, which is spelled Jorge, J-O-R-G-E, at elevatecig.com, I can send them. I've got a couple different checklists. Talked about sponsors. I've got a list of questions to ask sponsors before you invest passively. I've got a checklist for due diligence and a couple other things I can share.
this guy has a ton of stuff that he gives away for free because he cares about helping the next guy. So you said, and I didn't know this until this interview, you said that you worked at UPS.
I did. Right?
So you went from UPS worker to owning over 1,700 units, and you have a goal of getting to 10,000 units within the next 2 years. There is no excuse for anyone listening to not get involved, okay? It's all in your mind. You have to get over that limiting belief and do what this guy did. Until next time, guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.